Football is back, and so is the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thanks so much for being with me, your host, Arthur Arkish. Once again this week, we will be chatting Rams with Joe Curley of the Ventura County Star, and Bills discussion with Joe Biscaglia of WKBW. Looking forward to bringing you those interviews here momentarily, but before I do, my plea or my request for you is to head to iTunes if you haven't already, and please subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. While you're there, leave us a rating and a review. It's the best way to ensure that we find as many of you as possible, and doing so is also the best way to ensure that you never miss an episode as our frequency continues to pick up as football season nears. So thank you very much for that, and I also want to say thank you very quickly to our awesome sponsor, Loot Crate. Be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw. Enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. August's Loot Crate theme is Kingdom. And basically, if you're not already familiar, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. They offer an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. And this month, the franchises include The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and The Lord of the Rings. So Loot Crate has really been on fire, frankly, with their themes in recent months. And this is going to be another really cool one. You're going to have an opportunity to get monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you want to get fancy, get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. They can geek out your pet with Loot Pets. They're here for the fanatical fashionista as well. Try Loot Wear. Lots of great stuff, guys. And one lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. One more time, go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, thank you once again to Loot Crate, and without further ado, I do want to go ahead and jump into this interview with Joe Biscaglia of WKBW, and just a quick note, I recorded this interview, this Bills chat with Joe last week, so we're taping here Monday the 31st, it was before the weekend, so just keep that in mind, all the information should still be good, but it has been a few days since we chatted, so without further ado, here's Joe Biscaglia of WKBW. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly offseason recap series, we're pleased to welcome in Joe Biscaglia, Bills beat reporter for WKBW and the author of their team report in the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine. That's available on newsstands now. Joe, thanks so much for taking time today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Camp is upon us. It feels like it kind of snuck up out of nowhere, but football is officially back in 2017. I can't wait.
Yeah, no doubt. I think we're all ready for it. I know Bills fans are likely ready for it, and I'll just jump right in with my opinion. I really like the Sean McDermott hire, and it's easy to think that maybe Buffalo pulled one on Carolina now, getting Brandon Bean a couple months before that front office implodes a little bit. Just your general thoughts on Buffalo's latest reboot and what it's like for this sort of rookie power duo to try and sell hope to, I'm guessing, fans that need it as much as any in the league.
You know what? They represent a change that has been much needed, especially with the last regime. But, I mean, even if you want to look within the confines of the drought in itself, because this is a franchise that hasn't been to the playoffs for 17 years now. It's an embarrassment to them. It is a monkey on their back. It gives them the weight of the world on their shoulders. And they realize it. So, but the whole thing of it is they have been trying to do a lot of the same stuff year after year after year. And I think finally, now that they've overturned a lot of different offices within the building, not even just the front office, not even just the head coach, they're kind of giving the whole franchise a bit of a refreshing, so to speak. So bringing in a guy like Sean McDermott and bringing in a guy like Brandon Bean, two guys who are analytical thinkers, hard workers. There's not going to be a lot of guys that outwork them, and guys that really came from nowhere to rise to a big position of power within the NFL. I think that's the type of hard work and that the Pegulas, the owners of the team, want to encapsulate with their city, with their franchise, everything like that. So, you know, really coming from a guy like Rex Ryan, who kind of lacked in the attention to detail category, mm-hmm. Bringing in Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, guys who really have a complete, total attention to detail. I think that is going to be the biggest thing. But can they win football games? That's the biggest thing. They've done and said all the right things so far. It seems like there's a bit of a different feel to the organization. But again, they haven't won or lost a game at this point. So I guess we'll just have to wait and find out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I have liked some of the early moves. We'll get to sort of the draft here in a minute. But you mentioned the details, and one of the biggest ones thus far this offseason, and we are going back a couple months, but it's my first chance to visit with you on the podcast. The decision not to pick up Sammy Watkins' option for next year, placing him in a contract season, did you think that was the right decision? And did you see and or hear a different Watkins this offseason after it was made?
Yeah, that out of all the decisions they made this offseason, that was the only one I disagreed with. Okay. I think with him, he of course he has the injury concerns, but to me, I don't want to give up on talent. And he is extremely talented. It's not like he's a headache off the field or anything like that.
Right.
He is an extremely talented player. And when he is healthy and on the field and going, he can be, in my mind, a top 5 to 10 receiver in the league. Now, it's tough because you haven't been able to see that just yet, but really the logic behind it that I didn't get more than anything is they simply could have walked away from the fifth year option by the time next year came around if they so chose. It was just them giving themselves the option to pick up that option and they declined it. Maybe they wanted to use it as a motivating factor for him to get back in, but he definitely is motivated. I'll tell you that. It seems like we're going to see a little bit of a different Sammy Watkins. And of course, we all know in contract years, guys just, you know, they raise the level of their games from time to time. But I think Sammy, you know, has been so used to people his college, everything like that being so pro him, he hasn't really had to face a lot of adversity, and right. I think this might be a motivational tactic, but it could also be a very expensive motivational tactic if he comes back and plays at the caliber that I think he's capable of, and it, by all accounts, it seems like he's on the mend, and you know it seems like he's getting close to a full return here at some time in training camp this year.
So, Joe, there's obviously no doubt that it's a bad sign. It's a red flag. If a team doesn't pick up the fifth-year option on a player, it's designed to give team control at a reasonable rate. But I guess the only reason maybe I would think it was it made sense anyway is the one thing it doesn't put him on the hook for is the injury guarantee. And the only and correct right. me if I have the wrong read on this, but the only thing that's really held Watkins back from being great is injuries. So, I mean, I assume that's the obvious connection and really was the sort of the trigger behind the decision.
Yeah, that's all right. If he was unable to come back, then yeah. But from where they were with and what reads they were getting from his rehab and everything like that, they were of the opinion that he was going to be coming back, which is why it kind of like makes me scratch my head a little bit. But
okay, sure.
That said, he's still under contract for this year, and if he has a great year, then they're going to do everything in their power to not let him go anywhere.
Right.
And if they really need to, they'll just use the franchise tag on him. But they wanted to see it before, I guess, really committing another year to him. Which again, like I didn't really agree with the move, but you know that's the type of. I think the last regime with Doug Whaley would have been like, yep, take the option right away. Whereas mm-hmm. this regime kind of thinks things over a little bit and thinks about what's best for the long term of the organization. And I can't necessarily discredit them for that.
And maybe backed up their decision a little bit in round two with the Zay Jones selection. People will debate what his ceiling is, but a really productive college player. We'll talk about him a little bit more in a couple minutes, but I have to get to the other sort of high-profile decision or move by the team this offseason. It was another restructure, I believe, for Tyrod. He's got another new coordinator. What are reasonable expectations? Tell me if this is sort of my team Tyrod narrative that I've created, but I feel like he hasn't maybe gotten a totally fair shake, from the lack of continuity to one of the worst receiving cores in the league to sort of tepid endorsements from his bosses. Is that fair to say, or maybe are we cutting Tyrod a little bit too much slack?
I think it's probably somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Just because with him, he is there's no doubt he is a starting caliber player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he's right on the cut line. But from that perspective, I think there are a lot of deficiencies in his game that, you know, teams really one thing that really stood out more than anything last year were teams that after the game, they said, we want to make Tyrod a quarterback, which is not a great thing to hear about your starting quarterback of the team, but that's exactly how teams were trying to play him. They were trying to pin him in the pocket, because all too often it would seem like he would leave the pocket before things really broke down, and because he was more comfortable doing it that way. And there are probably a lot of yards left down the field because of it. Now, you absolutely have to factor in, you know, the receivers not being healthy, really not having much beyond Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods last year.
Right.
And Watkins was hurt for most of the year, and then Woods got hurt for a good portion of time. So you can't discredit that, but I think they need to see Tyrod take a step forward in progress. I mean, if he does the same thing over and over again, I mean, sure, you can sit there and have him essentially be like an Alex Smith type of role, but is that eventually going to get you the promised land, and is that eventually going to get you where you ultimately want to go to, and that's to compete and win championships? From what we've seen from Tyrod Taylor so far, I just haven't seen that. So he needs to show this coaching staff, which is why I like the extension. It gives them an out after this year, where they don't have too much dead money and in the 2018 cap. So to me, it was a good business decision on their part. And now Tyrod just has to go out there and prove it, just like Sammy Watkins does. I mean, this is a huge year for him. And let's not forget, the Bills have two first-round draft picks coming up in the 2018 NFL draft. And I would be very surprised if they weren't thinking long and hard about trying to, if things don't go completely poorly for either the Bills or the Chiefs, for them to try and move up to secure a franchise quarterback, something that they've been lacking for basically since Jim Kelly.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we're chatting with Joe Biscaglia, Bills beat reporter for WKBW. Also wrote the team report in the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview Mag. Check him out on Twitter at Joe Biscaglia. It's actually B-U-S-C-A-G-L-I-A. Joe, B-U-S-C-A-G-L-I-A. Hey, Joe, what do you think? You know, it's interesting because I feel like by season's end, the run defense was kind of the biggest embarrassment at the end of Rex Ryan's reign. But yet I wonder if maybe more of my questions are in the secondary. You mentioned the draft and moving back and picking up the extra first rounder and getting Tre'Davious White. He'll be expected to step in and replace Stephon Gilmore along with Ronald Darby. But a total reboot at safety. What do you think about the secondary and how that group is going to come together? I know the defense is kind of a work in progress through and through.
Yeah, the one thing they really lack is depth all over the defense, and the secondary in particular. They're going to need somebody to step up, really two people to step up. Tre'Davious White had a really good spring, and can he transition that into the summer? We'll just have to see, because sometimes you get fool's gold in OTAs and mandatory minicamp, as we all know. But he did look the part, and it looked like he fit very well into what Sean McDermott was trying to teach for his zone-based defense. They need Ronald Darby to step up a lot more than he did last year, because even though he had a really impressive rookie season, we also have to remember that, A, he got benched last year at one point in the season for a guy named Corey White, who I don't even know if he's signed anywhere in the NFL at this point. And then, B, you know, this is a team that is going to a more prominently zone-based defense, and Ronald Darby, for the majority of his career, college and professional both, has been a man-based cover corner. And with McDermott, he likes a certain prototype in his cornerbacks to where, you know, they're a certain height, they have a certain arm length, and Ronald Darby is below that line in both those categories. So, you know, he has to prove it definitely this year. And then beyond him, I mean, the depth, they need Kevon Seymour, a sixth-round pick from 2016, to step into maybe the nickel role, or Leonard Johnson, a guy that they picked up who's familiar with Sean McDermott's defense. That's going to be big. And safety, too, is I like Micah Hyde. That was their big ticket signing this past offseason. But, mm-hmm. you know, Jordan Poyer is someone that doesn't necessarily impress me. I think he's average to maybe slightly above, maybe slightly below average. I think he's right in that middling tier. And but behind those two guys, they really have no depth to speak of. So they need to make sure that they have a protective shield around all of their players to make sure that they don't get hurt, because if it does happen, you know, that this could get ugly in a hurry.
Yeah, well, Joe, I'm here in Chicago, as you know, and follow the Bears closely, so we can sort of sympathize with Bills fans' plight from an injury standpoint. Certainly, two of the more banged-up teams in the league, throw the Chargers in that mix, too, as far as bad luck with youngsters especially. Sticking with the defense for a minute, you mentioned the move to a zone-based system under McDermott, of course, and we know what the engine was with the Panthers the past several years. It was that defensive front. The Bills have some horses mm-hmm. up there, but what do you think? Does Marcell Dareus have to grow off the field in order to regain his dominance on it? Where do you think he's at, if that's the case?
Yeah, there's no question that when he's in on game day, that he is a dominant player. Now, mm-hmm. they just need him to buy in off the field, like you said. That's going to be the biggest thing that maybe holds him from becoming one of the best in the league at his position. I think he's certainly getting paid like it, and they want him to perform that way. It's just a matter of him doing it, and there's no more leeway anymore. I mean, this is not the Rex Ryan regime where there isn't a huge attention to detail. This is not a situation where he could potentially be late for practices, late for meetings, anything like that. He needs to prove it to this coaching staff that he is buying in, and the only way he can prove it is with his actions, not his words. And I will be very interested to see, if you recall from Hard Knocks last year, the Rams defensive line coach Mike Waffle, who very military type of style, right. that type of background, he is their new defensive line coach. So how he melds with Marcell Dareus, I think, is going to be one of the more interesting things to track as we kind of go along here. But along that defensive line, same vein. They like you said, they have four horses, or three horses, and one with potential in Shaq Lawson.
Right.
But after those guys, there is a complete drop-off. I mean, again, they need to wear body armor so that they do not get hurt, because after their main backup defensive end is a guy named Ryan Davis, who is kind of a journeyman veteran at this point. Mm-hmm. Their main defensive tackle backup is Adolphus Walton, who has been in the news for the wrong reasons this offseason, and he really didn't play all that well last year, so as a rookie. So they need their main four guys to step it up in a big way, and they really can't afford anything else to happen.
And Joe, before we get back to the offense, talk a little bit more about Tyrod and Zay Jones, and certainly Shady McCoy. What about those other two guys? You mentioned Adolphus Washington. I believe his gun charge was just resolved. I'll let you fill in the listeners on that if you know more information. But what about those other two defenders in front of him from last year's draft class, Shaq Lawson and, of course, Reggie Ragland, returning from an injury that stopped his rookie season before it started? We obviously don't know what McDermott – I believe we don't know what McDermott and Bean's evaluations were on these guys, but it kind of feels like extra high-round draft picks after certainly a red shirt for Ragland, and sort of an incomplete, I would think, for Lawson after his rookie year.
Right, and, you know, with Shaq Lawson, I think it's a situation where he was almost drafted to the wrong team last year in the wrong situation, because he's 6'3", 6'4", 280 pounds, and in a 3-4 defense, he's not really an outside linebacker. He's not really a five-technique defensive end. He's definitely not a nose tackle, so where exactly does he go? And mm-hmm. so that's why I think when Sean McDermott came here and re-implemented the 4-3 defense, I think Shaq Lawson was probably as big of a fan of that decision as anybody, because he is much more in a much more natural position at this point. So I'm cautiously optimistic about him. You know, he showed a little bit last year, but really didn't have enough time on the field to, because of the shoulder injury, to show exactly what he brought to the table. Now, Reggie Ragland, my main question on him is, where does he fit on this defense? I asked Sean McDermott point blank during the owners meetings back in March, where does Reggie Ragland fit your defense? And he said, I see him as a middle linebacker. But that said, think about the middle linebacker that has, been in Sean McDermott's defense for the past several years. It's Luke Kuechly. And one of the biggest things about his game is his ability to move. And Ragland, along with Preston Brown, another guy who's kind of a holdover, who will both be fighting for that main middle linebacker spot, are they of fleet of foot enough to maintain that middle linebacker role to where it's not a deficiency for the defense, and trying to cover and trying to get back in the zone and, you know, figuring out what's going, diagnosing the run like Luke Kuechly does? That's a huge question. So, but they do really like Ragland from a leadership perspective. It's just he's got to prove it on the field. And Adolphus Washington, he needs to step up on the field now that, you know, the off-field stuff is, like you said, been basically resolved. Wasn't a good look for him, but at the end of the day, right, a lot worse things could have happened. So he needs to step it up, because he is going to be thought of as the main backup at defensive tackle now. And he needs to just show that he's got a little bit more to his game than what he did last year.
We've got a few minutes left with Joe Biscaglia, and I want to get back to the offense quickly. What are they? How much are they talking locally, Joe, about LeSean McCoy getting back to an offense a little closer to what he did to start his career with Andy Reid? A little bit more of the play action in zone scheme, I believe. And along those same lines, what about Tyrod rehooking up with Rick Dennison, and how maybe that scheme shift is what he needs to take the next step potentially?
Yeah, the biggest thing about LeSean McCoy is I think he's going to be catching a lot more passes than he ever has in Buffalo before, and that should probably excite Bills fans, because he is going to be the offense. There's no doubt in my mind he is going. There's still going to be a run-heavy team, even though Rex Ryan isn't here anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just a bit of a different philosophy behind the running, more zone-based, one cut, put your heel in the ground and get up and go when you see some space. So LeSean McCoy, that, I mean, he can make space basically out of nothing. The guy is incredible to watch. So again, but it's that injury thing. If he goes down, then they basically have nothing behind him. So they're going to need to depend on him week in and week out. Put him in bubble wrap during the preseason, make sure he doesn't get hurt, and then kind of go from there. But he is, Bills fans should be very optimistic about the prospects of LeSean McCoy in this offense. And then Tyrod Taylor, I think they're going to roll him out a little bit more, which he's comfortable with.
Right.
That's kind of a staple of the Rick Dennison, Gary Kubiak scheme. And because I'll tell you what, he's a lot more comfortable operating outside of the pocket than he is inside when he's looking down the field. It seems like when he gets out of the pocket, he sees the field better. And that's just from the, you know, all the film that I've watched on the Bills over the years with Tyrod, it just seems like he looks more natural, less robotic, and it just seems like he's more in his element. So maybe it's a good change for him, but at the end of the day, they're going to be depending on the running game and LeSean McCoy to really help them get to a respectable level in the league this year.
And Joe, last one I have for you, and thanks again so much for the time. You mentioned the void behind LeSean McCoy, and even in the best running back room in the league, there would obviously be a huge drop-off, but I think it's fair to mention that Mike Gillisley, it was that guy, and of course the Patriots were at it again in restricted free agency. Just sort of bigger picture, is it insult to injury that Bills fans have to deal not only with looking up with the Patriots at the Patriots in the standings, but it seems like they keep getting rated now the past couple off seasons, whether restricted free agency, unrestricted free agency, some of their best, I don't know about some of their best guys, but some key guys are ending up on their biggest rival.
Yeah, I mean, Stephon Gilmore is one, and Bills fans will claim that Gilmore was never any good, but I mean, come on, Let's be honest. You think Bill Belichick's really not going to really going to give a huge mega contract to a cornerback if he's not good? Let's just be real here. But the other two, I mean, the insult to injury are the two restricted free agents: Chris Hogan last year, and then Mike Gillisley this year. I mean, they both rated him and took advantage of the Bills' poor cap situation, which Doug Whaley put them in. So. Yeah, turnabout is fair play. If you're going to, you know, spend the cap unwisely like they did, put bad contracts on the book like Charles Clay, really handcuff what you can do in the future, then you're going to lose key role players. But I look at it from this perspective. The Gillisley thing, I was, you know, less misunderstanding about, because they got a fifth-round pick back for a guy that they picked up off waivers.
Sure.
And, you know, with the running back position, you know, I'm of the belief you can fill it a little bit more easily than some of the other positions in the league. And so are they going to depend on some unproven guys this year? Yeah, they are. But Mike Gillisley was also unproven when they started him going. So I think it's just a matter of them identifying someone in the current running back room, whether it be Jonathan Williams, a fifth-round pick from 2016, or Cedric O'Neill, a guy who was in camp with the Eagles last year. He showed a little bit of good movement in the off-season workouts. So I think they just need somebody to step up behind LeSean McCoy. And if nobody does, then I'm sure they'll be combing the waiver wire. I think they're going to be doing a lot of that anyway with the type of roster that they have and really how top-heavy this roster is, where they lack of depth in a lot of different areas.
Right, so Bills fans will probably want to have a roster card handy throughout the year. There should be a lot of grinding. We see it often with new regimes. Joe, I've taken too much of your time. I really do appreciate it. I know you're on your way down to Bills camp here on Wednesday. Safe travels. I hope it gets off to a great start. And if it's okay, we'd love to reach out again once the season kicks off and get some more of your great Bills insight.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, the pleasure is all ours. Once again, Joe Biscaglia, Bills beat reporter for WKBW and also the author of their team report in the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
All right, great stuff from Joe B. Thank you once again to him. And up next, we have Joe C. talking Rams. And we're going to start with some Aaron Donald discussion. He is a camp holdout. He is the biggest one in the league. So we'll see what Joe Curley thinks about that. And then Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, and the fight for LA, all that and more with Joe Curley of the Ventura County Star right now. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, it is my great pleasure to welcome into the program Joe Curley. Joe covers the Rams for the Ventura County Star. Excuse me, I did that when I was talking to Joe off air as well. And the Twitter handle is at VCS Joe Curley. What's going on, my man? Welcome to the program.
I'm just spending my month in the car driving down to Irvine, covering our second training camp back in Los Angeles after 23 years in St. Louis. So it's been a kind of a whirlwind reindoctrination into the NFL life for Southern Californians and the Southern California media as well. So we're now sophomores. We're kind of learning everything as we go, but it's been certainly been fun, even with a 4-win season last year.
So Joe, as NFL coaches would put it, you're expected to make a big sophomore jump this season in your coverage, right?
Exactly, and I think my editors would would agree with that. I think I'm under the gun. I'm like I'm like Tyler Higbee or Farrell Cooper or I guess Jared Goff. We all have to improve pretty mightily in the second year.
All right, very cool. Well, I definitely plan on trying to get to all those guys in our conversation, and I definitely want to get your take on sort of the vibe locally with not one but two teams back in town. But let's just cut right to the chase, because sure, there's one story that's dominating the Rams right now. And, Joe, I think Aaron Donald may be the favorite to win defensive MVP this year, but I know that even he can't do it if he's not on the field. What can you tell us about what's the latest on the NFL's biggest holdout as we tape here on Monday evening?
Well, the latest is that, there's still not a ton of information from either side. There's a lot of kind of, the stuff that you get from the Rams is all very, respectful, and we really love Aaron, and we're, they said they were in the serious stages of renegotiation with Donald during OTAs when he wasn't there during OTAs the first day. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this thing has been drawn out, even before kind of it kind of blew up nationally, but it was that you could see that all the brain trust huddled around today after camp, and now every time you see Sean McVay with Les Snead, with Kevin Demoff, with Tony Pastores, with every time you see that whole group together, you're thinking, is this the moment? But certainly we're only 3 days into camp, and I mean the question is ever present. Every time McVay speaks, he's asked about Donald. Every time every player is being asked to weigh in. The players have been super supportive of obviously the best player on the team, and the fans are starting to. I went to a fan. It was kind of like a big tailgate session without a game mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago. Something called Rams Fest. It's an annual thing they did here even before the team was back. They, the kind of the underground grassroots movement of the Rams fan base in Los Angeles even before the team was back. And I went out there a couple weeks ago before everything got going again, and trying to just get a sense of the fan base on certain issues. And I would ask these questions, and everything would get derailed into pay the man. I have basically a supercut of 10 Rams fans saying, pay the man. So, certainly the fan base itself is uneasy about the prospect of having this season without the best defensive player. Certainly he's a transformative player. Certainly, depending on what, source you go to, he's either the best defensive player in the game or the best player in the game or one of the best players in the game. And he certainly is, a big presence in that locker room. And the one thing that the players are saying, obviously, besides their support, is that, the expectation is that it's not one of these holdouts that you're going to worry about it affecting the season as long as he's there. They know that Aaron Donald is working out, that this is killing him not being in camp, that he's going to, whenever he does arrive, whether it's tomorrow or August or, 2019, he's going to be, Aaron Donald, because they know that he's working out, just as hard, if not harder than everybody. And, that was the thing about OTAs. He wasn't there for OTAs. And the big thing when we weren't sure if he was going to arrive for the minicamp, and when he was there for the minicamp, you took one look at it and be like, yeah, he's Aaron Donald. He's, 265 pounds of, there's no spare tire. There's no, he's in shape. He's throwing a medicine ball, trying to throw it through the wall of the facility. He does this workout where he's throwing medicine balls, and it's just, you have to make sure to stay at a nice distance, because those things are flying around. The interesting thing is that certainly there just hasn't been a ton of information that's come out. His agents really haven't, there hasn't been anything to come out of that side, although, it's the same agents, I believe, that, Joey Bosa had. So that went down to the, the end last year, and some of these other guys. You know, we don't see a ton of holdouts in the NFL anymore, but you know, on the top end, you know, that was interesting, as Beckham showed, and Donald didn't. So
yeah, and we'll, obviously, you know, Donald is the biggest current one. Le'Veon Bell still out there, staying away from Steelers camp, but a different situation for him. He does not have as much leverage, already having been slapped with the franchise tag. So it's a fascinating situation. I don't think Donald has anything left to prove on the field. 28 sacks through three seasons, but his position is tricky. If the goal here, Joe, is to be the highest paid defender in the NFL, and I have to assume that it is, it's apples to oranges with the likes of, you know, Von Miller right now, soon to be Khalil Mack. How much do you think that complicates these ongoing negotiations?
Well, I think the complicating part is that, you know, Les Snead comes out at the combine and says, you know, he's obviously deserves a raise, and, you know, and we want to give it to him. And the, you know, the, and, it's you know, the, and obviously the Rams still have what, 4 more years of control. They've got this year, they've got the they've already picked up two years left, right?
So he's got a 5-year, year, 4 years with the fifth year option.
They've picked up the 5th year option, and then after that they could do a couple a couple franchise tags,
right?
So, you know, and then, you know, the big thing about him staying out is that they are moving from the 4-3 to the 3-4.
Right.
So you do want to get him kind of, you know, transitioned into Wade Phillips's defense as soon as possible. So that's kind of, I think, from a football perspective, where, you know, certainly he's going to come in shape. The question is whether or not it really takes anything to, you know, losing those reps during the offseason and training camp, if those have any effect on him being able to make the transition from, you know, still, they say it's still 3 technique, like it's still the, you know, pretty, you know, the same position, but we'll see, right. You know, we'll see once the season arrives, but, you know, so in turn, you know, Snead comes out and he says, we, you know, he, you know, this is somebody that we need to give a raise to. He certainly earned a raise. And then he brings up during OTAs, he brings up the JJ Watt contract going into his 4th season after, you know, after 3 years. JJ Watt was given what, that 6-year, $100 million extension. And that is kind of, I think, you know, the Rams have come out and they've said, we're going to pay him, and here's the baseline. And so I don't understand, you know, the big question is, what's the holdup? Why is this taking so long when, you know, the Rams have come out themselves and said those two things. And Donald has been very, he's, you know, he basically, I've heard him nationally. We couldn't speak to him during OTAs. And he's gone on a couple radio shows. There's a couple opportunities. He basically hasn't spoken about this at all. Besides, there was one quote talking about how, you know, this is a business and I have to take care of it. And, but you know, the interesting thing is the Rams are the ones that are basically negotiating against themselves in the media, where they've come out with these 2 points, and you got to wonder, the holdup is either the Rams have that leverage, and because there is all that control,
right?
You know, if they're saying something publicly, and maybe they don't want to pay him this year, maybe they want to pay him next year. The day that they picked up the option, I talked to Kevin Demoff, the Rams chief, and one of the things, and it was just a simple, you know, I was like, oh, the news of the day, Aaron Donald, you guys picked up his 5th year option, and he said, oh, is that a, you know, a big surprise? Is that big news? Obviously, you know, something we're gonna do. And but the question, I was like, all right, well, when are you gonna get the extension? You know, what's the you know, when is this gonna happen? And the first, this is before any of this happened, before he didn't show up to OTAs, he said, well, you know, we have 2 years to make that happen. So the question is, do the Rams really not want to do this until next year? Is Donald trying to force this to happen now? With the Rams already saying that baseline is JJ Watt's contract, are you know, is the Donald side hold, you know, do they want to blow that out of the water?
Right.
Versus just have, you know, matching that contract somehow.
Some great points in there from Joe Curley of the Ventura County Star. Follow him on Twitter at VCS Joe Curley. Especially the stuff about switching to a 3-4. I don't have any doubt that Aaron Donald is scheme transcendent. He has already proven to be that, but it is going to take time. Yes, Wade Phillips wants to get up the field, and yes, in a lot of ways, it's really a 4-3 under, but he is going to need to get his hands on Donald and see exactly how he's going to fit into that new role. So really good point there. The one other thing I would say, and then I do want to move on because we got to talk about all the Rams, not just Donald, is J.J. Watt's deal did occur a couple years ago. So while I thought the Texans, who made an exception there, the Texans don't normally go work with guys early, but they got to Watt early because he's a three-time defensive MVP. But the thing about that is, my guess anyway, is that Donald's representation is saying, okay, well, yes, that was a few years ago, and we've seen Kawan Short and Fletcher Cox and Muhammad Wilkerson, I think, have all beat that deal since then. So there may be a different baseline. I don't really know. That's just me speculating. But it's going to remain a huge story, obviously, and we'll continue to follow it very closely. Joe, let me ask you, and I'm totally switching gears here, but again, let's get to some of the rest of this roster.
Sure.
Do you think Sean McVay believes in Jared Goff?
Well, I've thought of this. This has been obviously the big, you know, when you talk about Goff and you know, obviously everything's changing with McVay. And the my thing is, Sean McVay, a couple months ago, has the opportunity to pick the Rams or the Niners. It's on the table. You know, he basically could have gone to either franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Does he not? To me, I don't think he joins the Rams if he doesn't look at. I mean, he has that big meeting with Goff. Goff is part of the whole, you know, interview process. I don't think at that moment, maybe, January, Sean McVay, I don't think takes the job without believing in Jared Goff. That's, to me, that makes sense. If he doesn't believe in Jared Goff, why not just go to the Niners where you have all that cap room and be able to figure out something to bring in, you know, obviously they don't have someone there, but the world, you know, with all that cap room and, you know, that he could have gone out and got somebody.
Sure.
So, you know, that's kind of my thought process with it. You know, there has been some moments during OTAs and kind of the national media kind of jumped on him a couple times where, you know, he's given these kind of coach quotes where it's, you know, where everyone's competing, every job's available, and people jump on it saying Sean Mannion this, Sean Mannion that. And you had the Dickerson thing last week where he says, you know, why not give Mannion a shot? But I do think, you know, I do think Sean McVay looks at that, you know, looks at Goff's college film, looks at some of that film from last year, and obviously it was a disaster. Oh, he was 0-7, and it was a mess, and it got worse as the season went on. I am one of those people that has seen Goff in practice and thinks there's some upside there, thinks there's, you know, eventually he's going to get right and be a serviceable to good NFL quarterback.
Okay.
There is talent there. But certainly anybody who just watched the football last year, oh, man. I mean, you know, to me, it's hard to get a read on Goff from the game film because the line was so horrid. To me, they've had the worst receiving core in football for X amount of years, however you want to go back. And, you know, plus the coaching staff turns over. And I think there's all those questions. And the good news is that, you know, all those things have changed. The coaches are different. Certainly the receiving core still has a long way to go, but they've totally turned it over.
Right.
And the offensive line, you know, certainly the addition of Andrew Whitworth, you have to believe at least in a pass protection standpoint is going to be significantly improved. And I've said this in a couple places that to me, one of the sneaky reasons to believe the Rams offensive line really takes a step forward this year is Rob Havenstein and Jamon Brown were both injured all of last offseason, basically. So they had rehabilitative offseasons rather than productive offseasons. And they've totally had productive offseasons. They look a lot better. Rob Havenstein's a big guy, and to not be able to basically move all of last season and then have to jump right in at tackle, I think really hurt his development.
Right.
We'll I think that right side of the line is going to be significantly better this year, just as those guys, you know, they're not sophomores anymore. They're juniors, and they're healthy juniors, and they should be much better than what they were last year. We'll see if that happens.
And, excuse me, we're here in Chicago, Big Ten country, so I do remember Havenstein a little bit. I do know that he impressed as a rookie and, like you said, took a step back last year, I think, but mostly injury-related. So maybe that bodes well for my next question, and we'll try and kind of bounce back and forth. I have some more on the defense, obviously, but the other face of the – if there's three recognizable figures in this franchise, we've now hit on two of them. Part three, Todd Gurley – chances that he can get back to being that first 5 weeks of his rookie season, because from my vantage point, we really haven't seen the same back since.
You know, I think there's a we talked to obviously the right side of the line. I think the right side of the line is going to be a big part of that. You know, I think that's going to be the side of the line that they run, you know, maybe more run, you know, heavy to that, to the right side of those two guys. But the in terms of Gurley, there is one thing that I worry about in terms of McVay's track record, in terms of Gurley, the type of back he is, because you didn't really, you know, I mean, do you match him with Matt Jones and wonder, you know, because Matt Jones never really kind of came together as a back for McVay. You know, they did go to those kind of multi-talented kind of receiving backs a little bit more last year. Maybe Chris Thompson. Just me being – yeah. So I worry about that. But in terms of Gurley himself, I mean, I think when you watched All or Nothing, I think, you know, because Gurley last year obviously was a disaster of a year, you know, and everything – there was, he was the star, and, you know, there was parallels with Dickerson, and there was all this stuff, you know, the national commercial they have at the beginning. He was – they tried to, you know, make him the face of the franchise. And so when you're the face of the franchise and you go out and you don't rush for more than 85 yards in any game and average in the 50s, and every week we have to ask him about, you know, what's – why is this not working? What you know, how come this is underperforming? And it kind of grated on him. I mean, in the second half of the year, it was just really like pulling teeth, and he kind of – retreated inward a little bit. And when you watch All or Nothing, the thing that was to me one of the big kind of quiet stories out of that is you looked and he was a leader, and he was angry, and he was it was a big there's just – he's in the middle of the game where he comes out after the after the game and calls the Rams a middle school offense. You know, they have that video of him in the locker room at halftime just throwing a fit and trying to get everyone going. And, you know, I think that to me was kind of you could see how much he cared and how much he was working on. And it wasn't just about him, I thought. It was about him trying to be a leader and get the offense going. I mean, I do think – oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to build on your interesting point about it was Chris Thompson last year, and I know McVay's used some different guys in the change-up role. I believe they brought in – was it Joseph – no, Lance Dunbar, correct?
Yeah.
And is he banged up right now? Did I read that today?
We have not seen him. He was not there at all for OTAs or minicamp. He's been hurt the whole time. He is on PUP right now, and I don't think they have – this is the thing, is later on when we talk about some of the things, I mean, we'll get to that position. I think that is a key position in the McVay offense. I don't think it's something they have filled yet. I think that's kind of down the line a little bit. I think if somebody like some of those guys that the Panthers had drafted had fallen into the, you know, bottom half of the first round, I think they might have tried to, you know, climb up the target one of those guys. I mean, I think that's the piece they don't have yet. So they might be, you know, Gurley might be tried. They might try to use him in a little bit. They were just joking a couple of days after practice that Nelson Spruce's family, the former Colorado star who, you know, had that one big preseason game, was basically hurt all last year. He was joking. His family was joking with Todd Gurley that Nelson taught him how to catch this offseason. So maybe they use him in both the Jones role and the Thompson role. Maybe he gets a ton of work, and that's that first year, and we really get to see, you know, just the where exactly are the outskirts of Todd Gurley's abilities. There's just not a lot there in that room, unless, you know, somebody like Malcolm Brown really takes a big leap this year. But I do think No, you know, when you look at Gurley last year, there's, you know, it's the offensive line, it's the scheme, it's Gurley himself. They all had off years, and all that. You know, the offensive line is obviously different, the scheme is obviously different, and the question is just, you know, how much Todd is, you know, was he carrying too much weight last year? There's a lot made of him adding strength, and he certainly was not as explosive last year, and there was some kind of grumblings that maybe he was missing some reads and missing some holes, and he was, you know, part of the reason for that whole offensive disaster. So we'll see. I mean, I think it's a huge year for a lot of people, but it may not be a bigger year than it for anybody but Todd Gurley.
Sure, yeah, he'll try and find a little bit of redemption, and that was just, I think, as good of a first month from a rookie running back as we've ever seen in the NFL, but we just obviously haven't seen anything close since. So let's look to the defense for a minute with Joe Curley of the Ventura County Star. If Aaron Donald is a strong defensive MVP candidate, I'd also have to think Robert Quinn, potential comeback player of the year recipient, and again, just potential is the key word there. I'm not trying to crown him or anything, but your thoughts on Robert Quinn trying to bounce back after a couple injury shortened seasons and another guy switching positions in Wade Phillips' defense, I believe.
Yeah, I think the talent is still there. The quickness is still there. Everything that makes him Robert Quinn is kind of still there. The big question is obviously, can he stay healthy? Mm-hmm. And can he stay on the field? I think it was eight and nine games the last 2 years. And which was, you know, certainly a big deal. That defense is obviously so much better when he's on the field. I think it helps to have Connor Barwin on the other side. One thing is he mentioned, we just talked to him yesterday, and one of the things he mentioned that he said the first day was kind of interesting, was just being, you know, he did stand up a little bit last year with his injuries. They let him stand up a little bit mm-hmm. when he was playing hurt with that stinger. But he did mention that, you know, some of the stuff that's kind of making his head spin a little bit is switching sides, which he hasn't had to do in quite some time, and standing up. And he is confident that he's going to be able to kind of make that transition. And certainly he, you know, a healthy Robert Quinn is going to be, you know, a huge difference maker. Just, you know, you look at what he's done, certainly from, you know, pressures and strip sacks and fumbles. I mean, he's a big turnover machine. And that was one of the things, the one thing that you can criticize that defense last year. I mean, they carried the offensive water. I think they were really underrated just in the fact that the offense was so bad. I think if the offense was mediocre last year, that really could have been a top five defense in the NFL. But one thing they did not do was turn the ball over last year. And I think a lot of that was because Quinn was either playing hurt or not there for the majority of the season. So, you know, he is kind of the big, like you said, it's a good call for him for comeback player of the year. Because if he is able to be healthy, certainly he's playing outside linebacker, but Coach Phillips has already said he's just basically going to be rushing. There's not going to be a lot. It's going to be like DeMarcus Ware. There's not going to be a ton asked of him in pass coverage and other stuff. It's just they're going to be moving him around, really.
I think there's a good chance that Wade Phillips will be the best thing that's ever happened for Robert Quinn, just because of his mindset. And like you said, Wade has a long track record of putting guys in the best positions for success. So I think if he's healthy, we're going to see something special from Quinn. Just so I can hit on all three levels of the defense, and I do want to get back for the offense for another minute here with Joe Curley, the Ventura County Star, another guy who I know didn't turn it over as much last year as he did 2 years ago, Trumaine Johnson, talking like this is going to be his last season with the Rams. Is that the vibe you're picking up on? And was there a real lack of game-changing plays in his franchise tag year versus the one that he kind of parlayed the tag from?
Yeah, I think those are the two guys. It was, you know, Quinn not being in the, you know, in the lineup, and Trumaine Johnson only had one pick last year. That's after, I think that he was leading his draft class or something, you know, in picks entering the year, and that one pick was a game clinching pick in Arizona, so it was a big play. But yeah, I mean, he was kind of banged up a little bit in the middle of the year, and he certainly didn't have you know, the say he was good and not kind of as great as he had been. But I was standing right there. I was you know, I was in the scrum just a couple days ago when he kind of surprised all of us and basically said he wanted to sign a long-term contract, and he really believes the Rams, I think the term he used was are going in a different direction or headed in a different direction. And when when that was a doozy of a first day of training camp, when, your best defensive player is holding out and your second best, arguably your second best defensive player or third best defensive player, is saying that this is basically, the last year in a Rams uniform and he wants to stay. I mean, there is the, you wonder in the back of your mind, is he just doing this to put, because they are dominoes. You've got they want to get Donald done first. Then, you wonder what's going to happen with True. And then, there's, LaMarcus Joyner and a couple other pieces that they want to Alec Ogletree, that are out there that they have to sign. There's all these dominoes kind of lined up, and Donald is the first one. And so you wonder if it's True just putting pressure on the front office to sign him. But then there was a report, Charles Robinson.
Yahoo, yep.
Came out just yesterday saying that he had heard that if Wade Phillips was not the defensive coordinator, that Trumaine Johnson would be somewhere else and they would not have tagged him. Trumaine is pretty interesting on social media. I mean, just earlier today, Leroy Irvin, the former Rams great, kind of tweeted something about how he thought it was insane that that it looks like it's going to be True's last year and Trumaine Johnson. And I was talking about the quotes and stuff. I think it was off the Robinson tweet. And Trumaine Johnson weighs in on, in the middle of training camp, he's probably in the locker room, weighs in on Twitter, basically saying, you go Leroy, like that, I agree with you, or something, He was hit. Wow. And so, the age of social media is amazing. So he's obviously putting pressure on the Rams. He obviously wants to stay. He obviously wants big money out of the Rams. And so the fact that it's coming out that Wade Phillips is basically going to determine that, it's kind of significant, because I do think, that Wade Phillips is, they've kind of given him that secondary. One of the big moves in the offseason was bringing in Kayvon Webster, who obviously worked with Phillips in Denver, and certainly it's somebody he believes in. I just talked to Webster yesterday about how, this was, that he basically followed Wade here. He's got a coach that believes in him, and that this is the first time he's entered a camp as the starter. He's learned so much in Denver, and he's looking forward to kind of showing the world what he's learned, backing up for all those great defensive backs in Denver. So
I think I did a piece, I'm pretty sure, in the offseason about some of the most underrated signings across the league, and Kayvon Webster made the list because just buried on the league's best corner depth chart, obviously, in Denver the past couple years. And seems like maybe he'll have the opportunity under, like you said, his former play caller. Familiarity will be there. So, unfortunately, Joe, we only have a couple minutes left, but I got a couple that just popped up as you were talking. I had to kind of chuckle. You talked about the eventful first day of camp, and I'm thinking in my head, well, at least the Rams have a head coach who's been around the block a few times, no, they don't at all. What's the what's your just early impressions of fresh face Sean McVay and the dynamic with Wade Phillips, who's obviously old enough to be his grandfather?
Well, it really obviously makes sense. I mean, when Sean McVay goes from kind of this, not unknown, but kind of this.
It happened fast.
Yeah, it happened soon. But it certainly makes sense when you've got the youngest head coach in modern history. What is he? He's the youngest head coach since like the late 20s or early 30s, something like that, in the NFL. And it's kind of a yin and yang. They are kind of a partnership. Where the other thing about it is McVay is hanging on to the play calling duties, so he's going to be worried about the offense, and you need somebody like a Wade Phillips to say, here, take the defense and make this. And the interesting thing about it is every time you ask Wade Phillips this question about, how are you going to help, shepherd Sean McVay through this first season and teach him, everything that you've learned in the NFL and get him, through these lessons. And every time you get, first it's a self-deprecating kind of joke from Phillips about how, I'll teach him how to do everything. I'll tell him everything that I've done wrong and he can learn from that. And then you get something where, Wade said, my number one job is to make sure he's got a great defense that he can rely on. And I'm just worried about the defense. And so there's gotta be a bunch of situations that come up this. Cause the other thing about it, Coach McVay is a head coach who's going to be calling plays. He's going to be one of those guys with the restaurant menu up to his mouth, worried about the offense, but there's so much, you know, in terms of game management that, you know, he's going to be learning. And, you know, you're talking about a 31-year-old head coach. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be lessons learned. And we're just going to track them and try to, you know, try to monitor them as this goes on. But, you know, you've got to – I mean, we've been really impressed. He can really communicate football. I mean, we'll see how well he coaches, but – I mean, everyone from Aaron Donald himself to the last guy on the team has mentioned that they've never really quite had a coach like this. That there's, you know, that that they are learning. You know, so it doesn't really, that whole 31-year-old thing has really kind of gone to the wayside, because these players are talking about somebody their age as if he's in his mid 40s or in his 50s and has experience. It is kind of an interesting dynamic, but certainly from, you know, a storytelling perspective, from some, you know, a yin and yang perspective, the whole kind of McVay Phillips partnership makes sense. And you wonder if hiring McVay would have worked without Coach Phillips, but you know, all the, you know, we'll see. Would they, like Coach McVay says, they haven't played a game yet. So we'll see what happens.
Right, Joe, I have went way over with you. Do you have time for two more? If you don't, I can cut you off right now. Okay, I apologize that this has gotten off the rails and it's my fault. But I got one more personnel one and then just one broad LA move one. You made me think of the personnel one because you said something about those the kids that the Panthers got, and obviously Christian McCaffrey, but also Curtis Samuel. And I'm thinking in my head, shouldn't the Rams already have that guy in Tavon Austin? And can we try and intertwine this from a fantasy football context? Because Tavon, this has got to be the best situation for him ever as far as getting together with McVay. But then when I look at the two exciting young guys on this team, they're from the tight end position, which is what McVay mastered in Washington with Higbee and Gerald Everett. So there's got to be a fantasy football nugget in there somewhere. I'll throw it to you, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, you've got it. You know, they are trying Tavon Austin as that – they're going to – at the beginning – you know, we're going to see if he can do the DeSean Jackson role, if he can be the downfield guy for the first time in his career. I don't have a ton of confidence that he's going to be able to do that. But I have said that my call is that when that kind of blows up or they decide it doesn't work, he can kind of be that Chris, you know, we've seen him line up in the backfield before. He was obviously that kind of gimmick sort of player in the Fisher era. You know, they tried to use him a million different ways. I mean, just yesterday he took a jet sweep, cut back, turned it up, and basically went untouched. And everybody, you know, the whole crowd was like, "Oof, there's Tavon being Tavon." You know, went you know, there's his upside. And so I think there's a really good chance that you get one of those receiver, you know, running back situations, like we saw last year in Green Bay. You know, maybe week four, week five. They are definitely going to try, you know, everything you see thrown to him is downfield right now. And so they're going to try to have him be that downfield player that they really don't have at this moment. They're going to give him that chance to earn that $8 million or whatever it is he's making this year, you know, as a receiver. But if that fails, I do think they have that fallback option, as that kind of, multi-talented slot running back sort of guy that, you know, Chris Thompson was in Washington, because they don't have, especially if Lance Dunbar does not get healthy and isn't able to do it, they don't really have that on the roster right now. I was surprised that they haven't, you know, I was surprised that they haven't done that yet. I think that's one of the holes that they have going forward that they'll probably address it the next offseason. There's just so much that they had to fill in this offseason. They didn't get all of it. So, you know, certainly in Tavon, you've got that option, and we'll see where that goes from. But obviously the other thing is I was surprised they didn't hang on, to a vet tight end, or they may be a spot where somebody gets cut and a vet tight end lands, because certainly they're building on Tyler Higbee, who's looked really good. Certainly, you know, Coach McVay really liked Everett. That was a player he had targeted. And, you know, not to, you know, but they're trying to do in LA what they did in Washington with those tight ends. I mean, he had what, 35% of the time there was multiple, you know, they were in 12 personnel. There were multiple, I think he went without a tight end only 4 snaps last year. So, you know, it's just insane. So when you're talking about, that's why I think they may go get a vet, because they've only got, you know, Higbee, who had 11 catches and 30 some odd targets last year. And then a rookie in Everett, and then a second year player who did not have a catch last year and to Merrick Hemingway. So you're really, I mean, they've totally turned over that receiving slash tight end core in the last year. And you're just basically waiting to see which of these guys can sink and swim. And I think it's really a gamble when you need something out of that tight end position. So if Tyler Higbee isn't kind of what they hope early enough, I do think they're going to scoop up a vet tight end at some point during camp. They may need to.
I'll give you one name to keep an eye on. We're here in Chicago, and Zach Miller could find himself potentially on the roster bubble with Adam Sheehan and Deion Sims getting significant resources from Chicago this offseason. Joe, thank you again so much for the time. Make sure you're following Joe on Twitter, at VCS Joe Curley, and check out his work in the Ventura County Star. Just on the way out, I've already went way over, so why not? I just needed to very quickly ask just your very general thoughts and also quick thoughts on how Los Angelans are embracing the return of not one but two teams, and if it's really kind of a fight between the Rams and Chargers for these fans' loyalty.
Well, marketing is a beautiful thing, isn't it? I mean, the Chargers get out there yesterday and they have all these awnings. Fight for Orange County, fight for Los Angeles. There was one that was fight for Costa Mesa, and we were all chuckling. I mean, to me, the Rams thing was was a heartfelt return. You had these older fans who had waited more than two decades for their heroes, the original Los Angeles team, the original Showtime, to come back. And last year, even though it was 4-12, I mean, that preseason game where they banged out the Coliseum for the Cowboys in the first preseason game was amazing. So, you know, that fan base is there. Now you've got these, older fathers and grandfathers now, giving that tradition down to their younger sons, and they couldn't be happier. But then the Chargers is a weird thing. The Chargers aren't – I mean, technically they are returning to L.A. because their first year was in Los Angeles. But they've just come up the freeway a little bit. Like, they have been Southern California's only team for that whole period. And there was kind of – I've been covering the Rams camp, and I did this big preview package the other day. I've literally gotten one email saying, when are you going to do some Charger stuff? Like, mm-hmm. The Chargers are the weird thing is the Chargers didn't move. They just kind of – it's just kind of a longer commute. Like, it's just really – it's a weird situation. So, I don't – there's not a ton of buzz. I mean, there are Charger fans in Los Angeles already because they were the only Southern California team. But it's not like – there's not like you have this love like you had for the Rams and certainly the Raiders. The Raiders are still a Southern California team even though they haven't been here and are not going to be here. Right. You're going to have a ton of people on the 15 driving out from Los Angeles to Vegas when they're there. I'm sure there's a lot of people that go up the 5 now to Oakland. So, it really is kind of a three-team market, even though the Raiders aren't even here. And it is kind of it's a weird deal. This whole fight for LA marketing thing is kind of funny because it's not really, the Rams have been super, they've been welcoming. LA is a two-team market. We knew this was going to happen. Like, we mm-hmm. We don't feel any animosity, so it's just weird. I mean, it may develop into a rivalry in the future, but as of right now, it's just kind of blah.
Well, it's fascinating. They both hire rookie head coaches to be the face of the franchise and handle a lot more than just trying to get the teams back to respectability, of course, with the relocation. So it will be fun to watch. I do suspect, though, maybe the Chargers, just if they're looking to gain an edge on the field, I think it's the Chargers and not the Rams who may have a chance to do that this year. But it will be fascinating. Joe, thank you so much. I really did not intend to keep you this long, but we appreciate all the great information. And if you're willing, we'd love to have you back on the PFW podcast once the season picks up.
Anytime you need me, Arthur. I appreciate it myself.
All right. Thank you once again to Joe Curley. Enjoyed the conversation. I'm sorry that we went a little bit long there, but a lot of good info. And I guess I just selfishly was going to keep Joe on the phone as long as I could, or on Skype as long as I could. So thank you once again to him for taking time out of his Monday night. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. As I mentioned, we have now completed 30 of 32 off-season recaps. And guys, I saved the best for last. We have a kind of a revisiting of Super Bowl coming up on the next podcast. We'll talk Patriots and Falcons. And after that, we're just going to have to start talking about some actual football, I guess, some training camp news and notes, and we'll dive right into a new season of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I can't wait to do that. And just one more thank you to you guys for sticking with us this offseason as we tried this project. I really hope you have enjoyed it. And I'm excited. I know you guys are too. Football is upon us, and it's going to be great fun. So until then, we'll be back later in the week with the Patriots and Falcons discussion. But in the meantime, I hope you are well, and we'll talk to you very soon on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkus. Thanks again, guys.